Welcome to another episode of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. My name is Michelle Zeman, and I am your host. And be sure to listen out for those code words so you can get your free CEUs. I am beyond excited to talk with this special guest. This is something that I'm actually getting into as a BCBA myself, and this is the perfect time, in my opinion, to talk about this. Knowing if my listeners know me really well, you know that I have been really into advocacy lately and getting, you know, more involved with the developmental disability community, especially for adults. So I have behavior shorty Carolyn today to talk all about this and about job coaching and all of the things that are related to our adults with developmental disabilities. So welcome to the podcast, Carolyn.
Thanks for having me, Michelle. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I am so excited. This is such a good topic and I'm so excited to.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you even got in the field. What inspired you to get into ABA?
So long story short, I was actually an AmeriCorps volunteer right after college and found myself in Fort Lauderdale because the program I was in, they moved me to Fort Lauderdale and I worked at a shelter for youth under 21. And I did a lot of like job training, case management, life skills coaching. And one of my coworkers actually was going back to school for ABA. So she was in school at the NOVA Southeastern University Developmental Disabilities Program, doing a concentration in ABA. And she was like, you should really do it. And I'm like, this sounds so cool. You can actually change behaviors and like, you can see that your work is effective because you see the data and you're collecting data and you see the progress. And I was like, I was all for it. So I went back to school. Left my job at the shelter and the rest is history.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is about the curriculum that you had created. So tell me a little bit about like what inspired you to create this curriculum.
Yeah, so I created a curriculum, which I haven't talked about on my Behavior Shorty page that much. I created a curriculum about a few years ago. I think it was like 5 years ago, called Ready, and it's a vocational training curriculum. I got the idea for it when I was in grad school, actually. My thesis was on vocational training and competitive employment, because one of the things that I found with our, you know, the individuals that we serve is there's a lot of support for like supportive employment and, you know, job coaching and stuff, but there were a lot of opportunities for competitive employment and preparing individuals for the competitive world, like working at a McDonald's or working at a retail store, something like that. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on like vocational training and that supportive environment, but not a lot on the competitive piece. And I did my master's thesis on it. And when I was working in Florida, the company I worked with was so supportive. And I was like, hey, like, I know you have a lot of teenagers, telling the company owner, I know you have worked with a lot of teenagers that want jobs. Can I create this program? And she was like, absolutely. So we started it. And then the pandemic happened. So we weren't able to implement it the way that we wanted to, but it was kind of like a blessing in disguise because I was able to kind of transform it a little bit. Like I was working with some of my teens one-on-one. And then through my experience, I've been able to tailor it, you know, a little bit to meet the needs of those that I work with. But that's kind of how I got into it, because I realized that there was such a need, because a lot of ABA companies, you know, they don't work with teenagers. A lot of them have a cutoff age, especially some that I've interviewed with up here in Connecticut. They, you know, have a cutoff age. And I felt like that is a need, like, you know, having a job training program, preparing our clients for when they become teenagers, going into adulthood and preparing for the workforce and independent living and all that stuff. I just felt it was so important to create.
You are absolutely right, too. I mean, like, let me tell you, the job trainings and like the things for disabled adults and for the community is just, you know, the resources, it's not even so much that the resources are limited. It's just that, you know, they sort of put people in a box of, oh, you can only work at these types of places. I've definitely noticed that like within the community and even
parents. Me too.
And like even in South Florida, when I was living in the Fort Lauderdale area, so I was in Broward County. There was a car wash in Parkland called Rising Tide, which I loved. I don't know if you've heard of it, but they hire. Have you heard of it?
I think I have actually, because yeah. I lived in Broward County for a very short period.
Yeah, so they hire young adults with autism. So autistic adults, they hire them, mostly teenagers and young adults, and teaching them those job skills, which I thought was really, really cool. And I was like, oh, this is like one of a kind. And then I moved back to Connecticut, and there's a place in Avon, Connecticut. It's a little like coffee shop that does the same thing. And I'm like, that's great. But then I was also working with some teenagers who were like, well, you know, I don't really want to work at one of those places because I don't want to be, you know, pigeonholed into that. I actually want the same opportunity as everybody else. And I think that's why I wanted to do this program so bad, because obviously I want to help my clients who want that competitive opportunity to be able to have a job alongside their peers. And actually, my first client that I did the program with actually got a job at Walmart. And he maintained that job for a while, which I was really proud of him for, because I taught him the skills to just like advocate for himself. And he was very, very like eager. And, you know, so it was really cool to see that, you know, he got the opportunity. But there's so many different opportunities out there. But again, I think a lot of the opportunities that I would see were just, yes, like you said, put everything in a box. Not enough opportunities to help individuals with competitive employment and working alongside their peers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I'm so glad that there's something like this out there, because unfortunately that is what happens. There's so much pigeonholing. It's like, oh, you have a disability, you're going to work at Publix for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And that's not what not everyone in the disability community wants that.
Exactly. And I actually I just finished working with an adult. I work with a nonprofit here that provides like job training. And what's really cool is that they do everything. They do competitive employment. They do supportive employment. They have job coaches. But what they do with their competitive employment program is they start off with having a job coach on site, which I think is really cool. And I was working with them creating a behavior plan for this individual because he was having a challenging time with the environment he was in. So we're focusing with him on finding the right environment for him, just because he was let go from his position at a restaurant. And we realized that it was probably not the right environment for him. So we're working with him on finding something a little bit more calm, a little bit more laid back, something that would better suit his needs, but also teaching him those skills to advocate for himself, like, you know, taking a break, but also knowing like sometimes you can't take a break at work, unfortunately, and knowing how to cope when that happens. Like if you really need that break, but you're not able to take that break, especially if it's a busy time. So we're working with him on those skills, no self-management skills. But yeah, that was something that I enjoyed doing because it kind of brought me to a different side of it. You know, working with adults, they need just as much support as our kids. So
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and kind of like curious to know about this, you know, when you're doing your lessons within the curriculum, walk us through the structure of what is a quote unquote typical lesson within your curriculum.
Yeah. So, you know, we kind of break it down where there's 10 different lessons. So it's kind of like a short term curriculum with the intention of like a long-term goal of providing that ongoing job support. So we start with, you know, doing like a re-ASIC test where we kind of figure out where their skills are, what would be a better fit for them in terms of their jobs, what are their likes and dislikes. We have a lesson on the job search process. So filling out job applications, interviews, resumes. We work on like the do's and don'ts of the workplace. We talk about like workplace safety and not just, you know, working in like a restaurant, but also with like, I work with a young female now where we're teaching like workplace safety in terms of like sexual harassment and teaching her about those sort of things, because that's something unfortunately that I experienced when I was 19 at one of my jobs when I was 19. And I think that's so important to teach our young women, like how to identify that, and even our young men too. Anybody for that matter, is teaching them how to be safe in that environment and what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. But then also we dabble into budgeting and money management, what a checking account is, savings account. And then for those that want to go to school, because there are so many amazing schools with amazing programs, we work on that college application process and finding the right school and the right fit.
That is so cool. Oh, I love that so much, you know, and it's something that like, even like I, as if I were to go back in time, like I kind of wish I had something like that just because I remember how challenging it was for me, you know, being a neurodivergent adult myself, you know, how challenging it was to not just first get a job, but even like follow the expectations of said job, you know? So the fact that this is in existence and this is a life, like this is something that is happening to me is just so meaningful.
And it's also great. Like when we started this in Florida, even before we started the program, we had a couple of teens that worked. And one of my colleagues, she was wonderful. She actually connected with a local restaurant and got our teens jobs there. So it was more like an internship and as a way of just like practicing the skills. And we had an RBT there acting as a job coach, and they were kind of on the sidelines, just like guiding them. And then we also worked with like a local animal shelter at one point. But I know like even with the nonprofit organizations that I work with here, they have, you know, like McDonald's or like TJ Maxx, you know, they'll allow us to bring in job coaches. Even the casinos have programs where they allow, because I live near the casinos. I know some of the clients that I worked with that have jobs at the casinos will allow a job coach to come in and help and support them. Yeah.
That is so cool. Like, yeah. You know, and it sounds interesting because like in Florida, we have places like vocational rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, vocational rehabilitation isn't always doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I've heard some horror stories from people within the community. And it's like, you know, some of the things that have been said, like, oh, my job coach failed me on this. And, you know, I didn't get the job that I wanted. I got stuck at this one place. Even just talking to someone the other day, they're burnt out by their job doing, I think they're a mail sorter for DHL, you know? So it's just like, it's things like that where it's like, you know, we need to be able to help out with competitive employment as much as possible.
And I think it's important too. And I work with the job coaches myself. So with the nonprofits, one of the nonprofits I work with up here is the UCP, United Cerebral Palsy, and they have their own job program. And I love the folks here. They're so great in that program. And they have different levels of the program. So there's some that are like completely independent that get like some support. There's some that actually are in the facility doing like their job training program where they have like a food pantry and they do vending for the staff. And it's like really awesome. But I actually train the job coaches. And one of the things I teach the job coaches is, you know, you have to see what the individual needs, right? So if they need space, give them space. You know, and I think that's something that I've run across recently is just job coaches not being trained in that and knowing like it's okay to take a step back and allow them to be independent. And I say that because one of the clients I worked with recently said like he felt smothered by his job coach. So I had to train the job coach that, hey, take a step back. If he storms out because he's upset, let him. Don't force him to come back to work. Let him go home. I think that's just so crucial, that job training piece. And I think it's great when behavior analysis and these programs can combine and we can train them on how, you know, we can implement ABA strategies, helping them gain that independence.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned working with job coaches. So how does that work? Like, how have you been able to successfully work with job coaches and sort of train them while also still ensuring things like confidentiality, client dignity, all those things?
Yeah. So, you know, for example, with the organization I work with, the UCP, we do have, and I always involve the client in my meeting, especially my older clients. You know, if I work with adults between like 18 and, I mean, my oldest adult that I work with is 78, but in like the job program, my oldest adult in the job program is in his 50s. So, you know, I kind of involve the clients as much as I can, but I think it's important, like, you know, I know that the nonprofits have their own rules and regulations, but for me, it's vital that if I'm going in and I'm observing the client. I'm not going in to say at their job, like, hey, I'm here to observe so-and-so. Like, I just pretend I'm just a bystander. Even when I was in Florida and we had our teens working at the restaurant, if I went in for supervision to supervise my RBT that was being a job coach at that time, we would just kind of sit in the back of the restaurant. And I would have my job coach slash RBT just, they would literally sit at a table, kind of observing a little bit on their laptop, just pretending they weren't there, but letting their client know, like, hey, I'm here if you need me.
Yeah.
I'm here. And so, like, whenever they would have a break and the client would come over, they'd be like, nonverbal praise, like a thumbs up or like a, you know, an okay sign, like you're doing great. Some of my clients even had like a phone. So they would, if they were 18, like they would text me or like the tech and we would just be like, you know, send them like that communication, like, great job, you know, like so they can check on their break, you know. So I think that's so important is to make sure, like, what is it that the client wants? What is it that they need? And making sure that you're not there being like, hey, I'm here to support. You know, even my adult clients, when they say like, hey, I don't like feeling like I'm smothered by the job coach, right? And feeling like, you know, it's embarrassing, right? I want the support, but also I want to not feel like I'm having this support for a reason. I tell the job coaches, you know, it's okay just to kind of stand aside and kind of blend in. Like we do with our kids when we go into the classroom, we blend in, right? Try to blend in with the environment and not make it seem like you're there for the client, especially if you want to protect their dignity, you know?
Yeah. So that's so important. You know, you don't want to like be so intrusive of their environment, especially, you know, like in the real world, no one walks directly next to you every single time you do your job, you know?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Nobody does that. Yeah.
And I work with adults who live in their own apartment. I work with adults who are married. I work with adults that have driver's license. Like the last thing they want is to have someone side by side with them. Like some of my clients do want that. They do. Some of my clients don't. And if they say they don't want it, then I'm going to make sure that they don't have that by their side 24/7. Of course, there's only so much we can do as behavior analysts when we're training, but you know, that's something I encourage the job coaches is to give them that independence in that space.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as like a job coach and as like the supervisor of the quote unquote job coach RBT, how do you coordinate with their bosses in the workplace?
So what I've done in the past is we actually had someone who was in charge of like the job training. And when I worked in Florida, we had someone that would like contact the bosses and I would have the RBTs because they were there with the client individually. I would have them, you know, contact the boss for logistics, but it was the client's responsibility to contact the boss if they were going to be running late or if they're going to be out. And we would work with the client on that. I know with the nonprofits I work with, because they have their own thing going on and I'm just there for support and writing the plans. What they do is they encourage the individual to be the one to be in communication with their boss. But if something were to happen, then they like someone will contact the boss to be like, hey, I actually had a plan where we wrote in the plan that the individual was going to if there was an issue and they stormed out of, you know, and they left the workplace in the middle of their work shift, that the job coach was call the supervisor and say, hey, they're going to call you when they get a chance. And then we would encourage that individual to call the boss and explain what happened. So we want to support as much as we can in ensuring the independence, but also making sure like we're not going to leave you to do it all by yourself. Like we're here to support you as much as we can, as much as you want us to support you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and it's so interesting too, because you know, we think about like what our clients want to do when, you know, they start to get older, what they want to ultimately accomplish and whatnot. And, you know, we want to be able to like provide that as much as possible. And at the same time, protecting their confidentiality, protecting their client dignity, treating our clients as if they're just like regular people, you know, because they are.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, you know, and I think it's important too, is that, you know, the unfortunate thing is, you know, I can't train every single company that we work with. And unfortunately I have worked with clients that have gotten fired because of the behaviors in the workplace. And, you know, I, as much as I could, as much as I want to go to every single organization in the state of Connecticut and New London County and say, hey, like, this individual needs extra support, you know, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes they don't. I can't do this. Impossible. And two, the individual may not want everyone to know. I'm not going to do that. Protect their dignity. Right. But three, also teaching the individual that sometimes, unfortunately, in the workplace, it's not going to be the right fit for you. Right. So sometimes, like, unfortunately, this is, might happen. What I love about the organizations that I have worked with, though, is that they do give a lot of chances and I do provide a lot of like support and patience. But unfortunately, I have seen where some organizations have, you know, I hate saying fire, but they let go the individuals, which, you know, then we're like, okay, it happened. Now maybe we need to find a better fit for you. Let's find a better environment. Maybe the restaurant was too loud for you. Maybe you need something quieter, like, you know, the city hall or a library or something that's a little bit more, you know, laid back than the fast paced environment. So, you know, we try to make it a positive for them, but try our best to support them.
Absolutely. And, you know, just the other day, I actually read something on LinkedIn that sort of like resonated with me. And I'll actually read off like the quote. As an autistic professional, it is assumed that I am the one with the communication issues that can impact my work performance, but it is almost never considered that the poor communication from non-autistic colleagues and managers may also have an impact on that. And
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Because I think, you know, what I see is that it's, you know, sometimes they're not aware of the needs of the individual. They just are looking at them as a peer and not as, you know, okay, this person has needs. But unfortunately, we can't go around and train every person, right? So we have to, you know, I teach my clients, like, it happened. We can't let it get to us. We have to find the right fit for you and a different environment that's a little bit more supportive for your needs. You know, if it's something where you need more breaks, maybe a restaurant is not the best fit for you. So also working on those antecedents with them. What is it that you need? Do you need more breaks? Do you like socializing? Do you not like socializing? You know, if you're in a restaurant that's fast paced, that might be too much if you need breaks and you don't really want to socialize. But if you're kind of like, you know, you like to be by yourself, then maybe like a janitorial type of job or something in the office is a better fit. We try to find the best fit for the client based on what they prefer.
Yeah. And kind of on that too, like, how do you balance, you know, preferences in terms of like, you know, the things that they like and they want to work in versus I need these specific accommodations because, you know, like you mentioned, restaurants, for example, are very high paced. I watch a lot of Kitchen Nightmares. And let me tell you, the restaurant environment, the restaurant industry is wild, you know? So I can only imagine, you know, if someone who likes to cook, but needs a lot of breaks, like, I'm not saying that it's not the right fit, but there's certain things to consider. So how do you balance the two?
You know, it really depends. Like, you know, I always say and tell my clients that I work with, if they go in for a job interview, if they're comfortable disclosing their diagnosis, I would say yes. And some of them are, and that's fine. I'm not going to push them. Even in the interview, like if, you know, I remember helping one of my teens fill out a job application. She's like, should I put down that I have autism? And I'm like, do you want to? She goes, not really. I'm like, okay, then don't. You don't have to. Yeah. No one says you have to. But if they feel comfortable during that interview process, like we do, and I advocate for my RBTs, is in the interview process is where you ask for your needs. And, you know, you kind of ask the company questions as I will, you know, help my clients ask those questions in the interview process of like, hey, what kind of accommodations can you provide for me? And I think that's so important because that way they can see if this is going to be a good fit for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting you say that too, because even like in the past, I wouldn't admit my autism diagnosis. And then I remember there was one job where I disclosed my diagnosis, but then they said, be careful about saying that to some people that you work with in your, and at the time I was actually working in a residential facility because they can use that against you. And so it's like, you do almost have to be careful in some ways. You know?
Definitely. And I think too, like with some of my teens, it's kind of like, I don't want to disclose, you know, that I have a diagnosis because I don't want my peers to know, and I don't want my peers to think of me differently. And like, you know, that's totally valid. It's totally valid. I also tell my teens too, I don't think they know this, is that, you know, their parents can help with their interview. Like their parents can come along to their interview if the company allows it. And I advocate for that. I'm like, you know, if you guys want, you know, someone to come with you, you can have someone come with you.
Yeah. And actually too, I'm glad you mentioned interviewing too, because I'm so curious to know, how do you approach teaching interviewing skills to teens that are, you know, within the disability community?
I use a lot of behavioral skills training, So a lot of practice. I'm working with a teen right now. She's so excited. She's going to be 16 soon. And she like cannot wait to have her first job. Aww. But she's going to be doing like, she doesn't have a job this summer, but she's going to be like a mini camp counselor or something. So it's kind of like a preparation. So we're preparing her for this, and we are doing a lot of role play. So a lot of, we're pretending we're doing like mock interviews, but also like teaching what questions are going to possibly be asked. And then we practice, and then we'll give immediate feedback. Just like with behavioral skills training, you want to give feedback, and then we keep rehearsing it. And then we'll generalize it. Okay, we'll have like mom or dad or someone else practice with the interview process, just to get them comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And also too, like, let's say, because, you know, one of the things I think about is unexpected questions that come up, mm-hmm. you know, because unfortunately some of those do come up. Like, for example, I had an interview with another company several years ago that asked me a bunch of ethics related questions, and it caught me off guard. It was good, but it caught me off guard, mm-hmm. and I didn't quite know how to approach it at the time. But then there have been some interviews that are a bit more like straightforward with other questions too, you know. So how do you prepare your clients for those unexpected questions?
I will throw in those unexpected questions in our mock interview. Like, I will literally just, when we're doing a mock interview, or I'll have an RBT, one of the RBTs, if they're working with a client on the mock interview, we'll throw in like an unexpected question, like a random question that we didn't even practice. And then, because I want to see how they react. And then that way we can like practice that. And if the client is comfortable, sometimes, like, I know I have some clients that like to watch themselves. So we might, with permission and consent, we'll record and have them watch themselves back and look at their reactions and their mannerisms. And, but yeah, we'll throw in a random question that catch them off guard, and then we'll practice that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that, you know, and it's one of those things where I feel like this is just so important to have, like, again, you know, thinking about, you know, just starting out in the job, in the workforce in general, you know, being able to get those skills to prepare you to, you know, basically like work in a field that you genuinely want to work mm-hmm. in. You know, I love this so much.
Yes. And I just started working with adults actually back in last summer, actually June of 2023. I got my first adult client that wasn't a teenager. So I'm like dabbling in the adult world. I'm working with group homes and, you know, nonprofits, and it's been so great because I'm like dabbling on that side and seeing that there is so much support, especially in the state of Connecticut. There is so much support here for adults, but it's so important. Like, ABA is needed in the adult world, and there's just not enough support. And it's interesting because when I get like supervisees coming to me and they find out I work with adults, they're like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know any BCBAs. I don't know a ton of BCBAs that work with adults. And I think it's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here in Florida, it's so limited. I mean, mm-hmm. there's such a big push for early intervention, and don't get me wrong, I'm all for it. But the thing that I think people sometimes forget is autistic children and autistic infants grow up to be autistic adults. Mm-hmm. You know, disabilities do not go away no matter what.
So exactly.
The support is so limited. Like, even down here in the state of Florida, I think we're like 49th in terms of our disability services. We're terrible. Yeah. Like, we're so terrible down here.
I lived in Florida for 11 years. You know, I like know the organizations like the back of my hand, but there really is not a ton of a support. Even when I worked at the shelter, there was a lot of support for the youth that I worked with. But when I had youth come in, like autistic or youth that had an ADHD diagnosis come in, they needed the extra support. It was so hard to find that.
Yeah.
It was so hard to find. But yeah, I mean, it's just so vital, like, you know, to have that, because I can't tell you how many times that I've worked with a client, because I've been abuse meeting now for 8 years. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with a client and then we discharge them because they've met all their goals. And then they come back because they need help with social skills. They want a job. And it's like, you know, it doesn't, the support doesn't end when they master out of the VB map. Like, there's so much more.
Newsflash.
That's why I like the VB map isn't everything, guys. Like, and actually a lot of what I derived my READY program from was from the AFLS assessment, the Assessment for Functional Living Skills, because they have a vocational training book and they have an independent living book, which I don't think a lot of people know about it, but I love it.
Yeah. You know, and it's so interesting to me that, you know, people are just like, oh, they met their goals, cool, discharge, they're done, move on to the next. But that's just it. Support doesn't go away. Support should never go away just because, you know, you were able to cross off every check mark or fill every box in on that assessment tool, you know?
Yeah.
Recidivism, I think it's recidivism, right? I don't know what the exact term is, but and I'm thinking in terms of prison, so don't mind me. But I'm saying, like, the return rate of people coming back to ABA services is a lot higher than we think, you know, because of the fact that there are things that still have to be worked on. It's not just, oh, you know, we're learning how to talk and go potty and, you know, communicate our wants and needs and whatever, you know, tolerate denied access. Now we're starting to get into more of like the meat and potatoes of support.
Oh yes, definitely. And even the adults I work with, they have a behavior support plan. I do check-ins like once a month, so I don't see them every week. I just check in with the group home staff once a month, but they have so much support in the state of Connecticut. It's just, it's amazing. But it does not stop when they turn a certain age. They're going to, you know, a lot of our individuals still need that support. Even the individuals that you're like, oh, well, they're fine. They don't need ABA. They don't have any behaviors. I'm like, you know, you hear that when people are like, they have no behaviors. They don't need ABA. ABA can help with a lot of things, right? So, you know, I work with clients that don't have quote unquote behaviors, but I hate when people are like, oh, they don't have behaviors. We all have behaviors. Behaviors are not just negative, guys. You know, we're talking now. That's a behavior. But when they're like, well, they don't engage in any like aggression or anything, so they don't need ABA. But it's like, yes, but they also have crippling anxiety and they're having trouble making friends. Like, this is why we need ABA.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the other side of that too is insurance.
Yeah. Insurance, I was just thinking that.
Yeah. Insurance does not care. Like,
they don't care.
Seriously. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I have talked to a BCBA from an insurance company that'll say, oh, well, we can't accept this client because the behaviors don't warrant intervention. It's like,
yes, no. I know.
You think that, but meet the kid, meet the child, meet the person.
Yeah. I had for the first time in my, I mean, I'm not trying to brag. I mean, I definitely have had it happen before. I rarely have my reports go to peer review, but I had one sent to peer review for an individual recently because the goals that I had didn't meet the core deficits of autism. And I'm like, this is a crock of, you know what? And so I call them myself and I'm like, hey, can I pull out of the peer review and just like redo the whole assessment? And they're like, yeah, you can pull out of the peer review, redo the assessment, resubmit it. And thankfully my company like covered for me to like, you know, a few extra hours for me to, because they're like, this insurance company didn't accept the AFLS assessment.
Ah.
And so I'm like, but they accept the Vineland. So the Vineland has a lot of goals that are similar to the AFLS assessment. So yeah. I did the Vineland assessment and then I was able to still work on the same goals. I was able to reword it. And then I got it approved and I'm like, okay. But insurance is definitely a big, big roadblock.
Insurance is such a barrier. I mean, like, you know, just because a kid doesn't engage in SIB or aggression or, you know, it might not quote unquote meet the core deficits of autism according to the insurance provider, not according to the diagnostic criteria, but according to the insurance provider, you know, it's like, oh, the need for ABA is not really there. It's like, that's not true. And you know that, like, no.
I mean, Yeah, when I got that report sent to peer review, I was like, are you kidding me? I'm like, they basically say, like, this individual doesn't have the core deficits of, like, the goals don't meet the core deficits of autism, and the individual does not seem to need ABA. And I'm like, but if you read my report, you will see that they would benefit from ABA.
Yeah, like, read my plan every once in a while, guys.
Read
like,
my report, on. Guys, read it.
Like, especially for our adults and teenagers mm-hmm. who need these skills, you know, just because a teenager might not necessarily engage in unsafe behaviors, you know, like inappropriate sexual behaviors mm-hmm. or aggression or property destruction, doesn't mean that their need for services is not like it's not warranted.
Exactly. I think yeah. that with, you know, this individual in particular had to do with, like, they didn't feel that chores was a core deficit of autism, but in the reality is that we were working, the way I phrased it, if they read my report, was the self-management skills, the hygiene part of it, you know, there was so much that needed to be worked on that they were just like, we can't accept the AFLs.
Wow.
And I'm just like, so I can't work with my client on sitting at the dinner table and eating a meal instead of in their room.
Yeah.
And leaving garbage in the room. Like, I'm trying to work with my client on, like, hygiene skills and eating and not eating in the room and leaving garbage everywhere and attracting bugs. Like, I'm teaching them how to sit at the table with their family and all this stuff. But they're like, no, no.
Yeah. It's like, you know, so much better.
Yeah.
The insurance. Well, now's the time to talk about our first code word. Our first code word is vocational. That's been a main topic today. So vocational, that's V-O-C-A-T-I-O-N-A-L, vocational. So kind of going into, going back into, like, what we were talking about with, you know, interviewing, kind of diving into workplace ethics. How do you address the balance between teaching workplace ethics, but also respecting individual differences?
That's a great question. You know, sometimes I'll have a conversation with my teens, especially about what the workplace expectations might be, considering what the environment is. So, you know, if they're working at, like, a McDonald's, what is that expectation going to be? What if they're working in, like, an office space, you know? But also I teach them cultural boundaries. I teach them different, like, what they might encounter with different individuals that they work with, but also advocating for themselves as well. You know, I think that's the hardest, one of the hardest things to teach is self-advocacy, because it's really hard, even for me, to speak up for myself. It is very challenging. But, you know, practicing with them why it's important to advocate for yourself. And also, you know, I think, especially with my teens, peer pressure. I remember being a teen working on a mini golf course and, you know, being peer pressured to, like, drink on the job. I would have, like, some of my coworkers bring in vodka and, you know, come on, let's just, like, take a shot at work. And I'm like, or even, like, peer pressure to give out free games of golf to their friends, right? So there's, like, so much peer pressure. And, you know, I know a lot of the clients that I work with right now are going to struggle with that. That's something that I think a lot of teams struggle with. So, you know, we kind of also incorporate ACT into it. What are your goals? What are your values? You know, if you're working with, I do role play scenarios. If you're working with a coworker who's pressuring you to drink, what could happen if you do and you get caught at your job? You could lose that job. And then what happens if you lose that job? So thinking about your goals and your values and what's important to you, you know, it's so important to have those conversations around that. I know peer pressure is so hard, and that's a big one that we talk about.
Yeah, I feel like peer pressure is not just hard for the disability community, but for everybody.
Everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. and even to, like, thinking about coworker relations, you know, mm-hmm. You might find, like, that your coworker is attractive, but, or, like, your boss is attractive, but you can't do anything about it, you know, yeah. because there's, like, sticky rules and sticky situations with that too, you exactly. know? So how do you teach that? Like, how do you work on that with your client, you know, with your clients? I know for sure role playing,
yeah.
but, have you ever been able to see, like, some almost like net situations?
Yeah. Where that happened? You know, I haven't had the chance to like see anything happen in real life, but I also incorporate some video modeling as well. So for my teens especially, everyday speech is a great curriculum. I don't know if you used it before, but they have video modeling for social skills, emotional regulation, problem solving, everything. But they just added vocational training or job skills and dating. They added two of those. Yeah. So if I can't like see it in the real world, right, if I can't see it in the natural environment, video modeling is kind of the next thing just for them to see. Because a lot of my clients that I work with are very visual learners, seeing that happen and, you know, not just talking about it, but seeing it in action. And trust, it's hard. I mean, any teen, I mean, come on, I had crushes on my coworkers. I thought my boss at the mini golf course was the like most attractive guy ever. I thought he was so hot. And he was only a few years older than me.
Oh my god.
I couldn't do anything about it, but like, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. I completely feel you on that. I mean, you know, when it comes to those like peer pressure situations and even like things like bullying in the workplace, because that is a common thing that
happens. That's going to happen. Yep.
Yeah. You know, so thinking about those things, you know, it's so good that you're able to sort of like teach these skills ahead of time, you know?
Yeah. And I think too, like, having a job coach in the beginning is good to help guide if those situations do happen, right? But even if they don't have a job coach on site, you know, I encourage my clients to communicate if something were to happen, and then we can troubleshoot, you know, how to respond. And I think to stay in contact with their supervisor, you know, just to make them aware that this happened and, you know, how can we help them work through it?
Yeah, that is very true, especially like, and, you know, I'm going back to self-advocacy for a second, you know, because what if, you know, you have a client that stands up for themselves and says, hey, I don't like this. Like, you know, I'm being pressured to do something. Mm-hmm. But then the boss, like for some reason, doesn't believe the client.
Yeah.
You know, has that ever come up, whether that be in real time in vivo or just in like a role playing situation? And how do you teach that?
Yeah, it's so, you know, that's the thing that's challenging, because you never know, like every situation is so different. And you never know, because like, there's so many random things that will come up in the job day. And I teach my clients that it's like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, but I actually just, one of my adults, I worked with them on how do you respond when a boss gives you constructive feedback?
Yeah.
Because I think that's one thing, is like getting constructive feedback or getting yelled at by a boss, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's be realistic. I remember being 19 working at a yacht club and my boss throwing things because he was upset. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, you know? And as a 19-year-old, I was like terrified. Right. So, you know, teaching how do we respond, and, you know, the way that I was teaching my adult recently how to respond in that situation is, instead of yelling back and cursing and stuff, is take a deep breath, you know, listen to what they're saying, do your job, know that you can go home. You're going to go home, you know, when you clock out. Right.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that I want to add too is that a lot of the adults I work with, when they start in competitive employment, we start with shorter shifts.
Okay.
Like 2 to 3 hour shifts. So not too long of shifts. And then we increase it as they feel more comfortable in that environment.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. No, I love that you do that. And also too, like, how do you help the person identify when they're feeling burnt out and how they feel like they're just not in the right place?
That's a great question, because I literally just worked on that on a behavior plan, is identifying those stressors. And it's so hard, because obviously that's a private event, so I can't see what my client is feeling, right? But I'm going to work with them on, okay, hey, if the job coach sees that they're stressed in that moment, I'm going to have my job coach check in with them and say, how are you feeling right now?
Yeah.
What is it you're physically feeling right now?
Yeah.
Right? And then take note of that. You know, I do, I have job coaches do check-ins with the clients.
Yeah.
Let's check in. Hey, there was a situation that happened. How did you feel? What did you do to resolve it? It's so hard to identify those private events as an outsider, but teaching my client and having someone guide them and looking for those cues, looking for those precursors.
Yeah.
Up to when they might feel anxious or stressed out before, like, you know, if my client, one of the precursors, maybe they start pacing or they start, if you see them sweating a little bit, okay, what's going on? It's okay to talk to your client as long as you're not totally in crisis mode and super escalated. If they're heightened a little bit, you can talk to them and work through it with them, because we want them to be able to identify why they're feeling the way they're feeling, why they're stressed. If they have, like, if they're feeling overwhelmed with the workload, or if their boss said something they didn't like, we can pull them aside and talk to them about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it's one of those things too, where it makes me wonder, you know, cause like I mentioned to you earlier, one of my friends is feeling burnt out by his job, and he's identified those things. He's identified, you know, like, for example, this job can be very tiring. You know, this job puts a lot of stress on me, and I want to do something that is actually within my field. And it's like, you know, okay, so teaching those things, I feel like is so important. It goes back to self-advocacy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You know? Definitely. And
unfortunately, that's not being taught enough. That is something I have seriously learned over the last few years. It is not being taught enough.
I always incorporate self-advocacy in my programs with all my clients if it's appropriate. Like, I incorporate it. Just because it's so important to stand up for yourself and be assertive. And I think people think that, you know, they get a job, they have to, you know, that's their job. It's not, sometimes these jobs are not forever jobs. I tell my clients, if you feel like this isn't the right fit, tell me.
Yeah.
Tell someone, I don't feel like this is the right fit, and we can help you find a better fit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I love that. You know, kind of on the note of self-advocacy, one of the things that you teach your clients about is money management. Mm-hmm. How do you help your clients advocate for the pay that they deserve? Yeah.
That's a good question. So a lot of the individuals that I work with, if they're in like a job training program, it's like sometimes if they're in like an internship, they don't get paid.
Right.
But I do, you know, what I teach my clients is to look for, like, obviously if they're 16, it's their first job, I'm going to be realistic with them. You're going to get minimum wage. Like, I don't want to, you know, I can, you know, tell them like, hey, you can advocate for higher, but you're not going to probably get a higher pay. But for my adults, I always negotiate. Actually, one of the strategies that I learned in college that I teach my clients is if they're offering you, if they say to you, what do you want in terms of pay? Or someone says to you, like, how much do you want to make? Throw back to the interviewer and say, how much are you offering?
Yeah.
Cut it down the middle.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. That is so true. And I didn't even think about that either, you know, because that is a common question that comes up. Oh, how much do you want? Like, oh, what do you, what's your like negotiated rate or whatever, you know, and I'll throw a number out there and then it's like, oh, okay. You know, like it's either ballpark too high or ballpark too low, and they go with the low.
I think a lot of people ask that question because they want to see if someone will say, oh, I only want to make $50 an hour as a BCBA when they give their BCBA $60 to $70 an hour. And then they'll give that person $50. You know what I mean? So it's like, I tell my clients the same thing. Throw that question back. How much are you offering? If it's a job like a McDonald's or a retail store or something, look up online. They always put like the salary range.
Yeah.
So sometimes McDonald's, like in Connecticut, minimum wage is $15 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So it's either between $15 or like $23 or something, right?
Yeah.
So I say to my clients, like, you know, how much experience do you have? How much do you want? If they ask, you know, what are you looking for? And they have the salary range in their job listing, put it in the middle, shoot for higher. What's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to give you less than what you asked for. They're not going to give you less than what they're offering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, kind of on that too, like, how do you teach your clients like financial fluency and literacy, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, you've advocated for the money that you want. They get, you know, a certain amount. Now they have to learn how to budget everything. Mm-hmm. How does that happen?
We have a budget sheet, especially for our teens. And we do like a realistic budget for our teens, you know, so your paycheck is probably going to be $15 an hour, right? Realistically, that's the minimum wage in Connecticut. You're 16. You're probably going to get 16 and 15 an hour. What are your expenses as a teen, right? You want to go out with your friends, maybe like $20 a week. You want to put money aside. So we have, actually my RBT found like a really cool budget sheet. I can share with you too. And so a really cool budget sheet for my teens that, kind of divides it based on like what is typical of a teen that they would need to purchase. Right. But then when I worked at the shelter, I had a different budget sheet for my young adults that broke down like rent, electricity, utilities, cable, like all phone bills and stuff like that. But when I worked at the shelter, we also had our residents set aside 30% of their money. So when I worked at the shelter, we had our own like on-site accountant and they had their own on-site bank accounts. So our residents would automatically put 30% aside into savings.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So they were taught like right away. They were taught right away.
So when they moved out or they were transitioned to our apartment living, they had that money in savings already.
Wow.
Yeah. So some of our residents, I'm like, they would leave with like $10,000. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah.
Awesome.
So we would teach them how to save. So I teach my clients now, you know, try to set 30% aside.
Yeah. That is true. Cause you never know, you know, they say, you know, save your money for a rainy day. And that's like your rainy day fund, or it's like your, let's say you want to go somewhere, do something special for yourself. You have that extra money on the side.
Yeah, definitely.
So that is so cool. That is so cool. And kind of like thinking about, money management, thinking about the future, does the curriculum ever go into like saving for your actual future, like a 401k or anything like that?
I touch upon it a little bit with my teens and young adults, but not so much because, you know, the curriculum is really, the curriculum I made is geared towards the teens and young adults, but I, you know, teach them, you know, there is like the 401k that you might get when you're older and I teach the importance of it. But for my adults, then I dive more into that. If their job offers it, take it. How much should you put aside? What does that look like? Not so much my teens, but more so my adults. I, you know, teach them about that. If their company offers it. Yeah. Especially like a company like Publix. I mean, they always offer benefits, even if you're part-time, which is amazing.
That is so amazing. I mean, Publix offers more benefits than some ABA companies.
Oh, 100%.
Which is so sad in my opinion, because it should be, you know, equitable across the board for all ABA agencies, especially because, you know, we run into situations where we might get injured. We might end up like something bad happening to us.
Yeah.
And so it's like, come on guys, we really, really need this.
Yeah. And on the topic of that, I always talk about workers' compensation with my clients as well.
Okay.
I'll explain what that is. That's part of workplace safety. So knowing that, hey, does your company have a workers' comp? They should have a workers' comp.
Yes.
And if you get hurt on the job, you're covered.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That is very true. You know, so I definitely understand that. And also too, like, you touch upon like higher education and college and things like that. How do you touch upon, like, how do you get into that? Like, what does that lesson entail?
Yeah. So, you know, I asked the clients first, so say, you know, how many of you guys are interested in going to college? And a lot of them will say yes. Some of them will say no. And I'll always say to them, you know, it's not required they have to go to college. You don't need a college degree these days. Unless you want to be a BCBA, you need a master's degree. But, you know, a lot of professions, you do not need a college degree. What I encourage my clients to do is look for schools if they know they need that extra support. There are so many schools, especially when I was in Florida, there's so many universities in Florida that provide support, that have programs. I believe, oh goodness, was it the University of Florida or one of the schools had like a specific program for autistic students.
Okay.
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. I forget what school it was. One of them had it. Maybe it was the University of South Florida. I don't know. One of them had it. But I know a lot of schools have those programs, right? So if like my client wants something like that, I encourage them to apply for a school with that support. And looking for, do you want, I don't know if you've seen Love on the Spectrum, but one of the one of the guys on there, Tanner, he went to Clemson University, and they had a whole program with that provided like housing, and you know, they taught life skills and all that stuff. So I have to see what is it that my client wants, and looking for a program that suits that. Involving the parents in that process too is really important to help them, you know. But yeah, I mean, I always say, like, go to college. If you want to go to college, go to college. There's so many that offer programs that will support you.
Yeah, that is very true. You know, I actually remember seeing that, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, you know, there are people who do want to be able to pursue higher education. And so it's so nice to see that your curriculum is like supporting their dreams in that as well.
Definitely.
So I love that so much. So now let's talk about, like, they've met all the lessons, they've done everything, it's time for graduation slash appropriate transitioning of services and everything, you know, assuming that that is the end goal there, right? Mm-hmm. How do you know that the client is completely ready to be officially graduated from the program?
You know, it's based on, like, of course, we're collecting data during it to make sure, like, if I feel like maybe they're not mastered in the interview process or the resume process, I might do individual sessions with them. So even if, like, you know, whether it's like a group session or individual session, if I feel like they need more help with it, I'll extend it.
Yeah.
I'll extend it. I'll be like, okay, I know you want a job. Let's practice the interview. You know, you did great with this, this, and this, but let's practice the interview more, and we extend it until they master that goal.
Yeah, that is so cool. And, you know, also too, like, how do you celebrate the achievements of participants while also recognizing sort of that, like, ongoing journey towards vocational and educational readiness?
Yeah, I mean, we'll definitely have a party when they graduate.
Yeah.
For sure. But also, you know, knowing that it doesn't end there, right? So a lot of the clients that get this program through me, they're ongoing clients. So now it's the in the field part of it, where they're in a job place and we have a job coach, and then eventually we fade ourselves out.
Yeah. How do you do that systematic fading? Like, is it very similar to a discharge plan almost, like, where you write in specific goals and then you take away, like, you know, a certain amount of time?
Yeah. So we'll definitely, like, we'll have goals that they need to accomplish, like, in the work site. And it will be definitely tailored to them. Whether it be, like, this is for my teens specifically, not my adults. My adults are kind of a different path that we take. But with the teens specifically, it would be in the job site with them. And we would have goals like, you know, are they on time for work? Are they maintaining, like, appropriate relations with their boss, you know, that sort of thing. And once we feel like, you know, hey, they're mastering their goals, they're pretty independent, we'll start stepping back a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That is so cool. And, you know, thinking about, like, that appropriate transitioning, appropriately ending services, you know, and thinking about, like, a discharge plan, you know, and writing up, like, what types of recommendations, you know, it does make me feel that much better that that is happening, you know, this is like something that is really, like, accessible for our people, you know, especially, like, maintaining, like, even, like, being able to ensure that our clients maintain the skills. So kind of on that, like, how do you ensure that they maintain the skills, but also maintaining confidentiality within the workplace and within the place that they're at?
I'll do check-ins. Like, I remember one team that I worked with where he got a job, and then I just did a check-in every week virtually. How's it going?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, it's time for our second code word. And our second code word is competitive. Competitive employment is something that we have talked about today. And let me tell you, competitive employment in general is so important. So that second code word is competitive. C-O-M-P-E-T-I-T-I-V-E. So a couple more questions that I'm thinking of just offhand. Tell me a success story that came from the curriculum.
Yeah. So this was actually, I think, about my team that got the job at Walmart. This was, like, my favorite success story because I just started the curriculum and he was my first client to get the curriculum one-on-one. And this was during the pandemic, so it was all virtual. Yeah. And so this is when I really tailor the program. I actually added like a video modeling component. And this is where I extended some of the lessons because I really individualized it for this person. And once he was done, like he applied for a job at Walmart and he got it. He got the job at Walmart and it was so awesome. And he was so excited.
Oh, that is yeah. so awesome.
He was stocking shelves. That's all he wanted to do was just stock shelves. And he was just so happy.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I actually have another success story I was thinking of. Cause like with the curriculum, you know, we also, when I was in Florida, some of our clients, I think is important where the curriculum is not appropriate for them. Just like every curriculum is not appropriate for some of our clients. Like VBMAT's not appropriate for everybody, you know, the curriculum is not appropriate for some of my clients, especially ones that might need like extra support. So I did work with a teen who I knew, like we knew this teen was going to need a lot of support. They were, they had very limited like vocal language, but we did get them several jobs where, and our RBT was fabulous. She connected with local organizations where he worked at a dive shop for 30 minutes doing like janitorial work. And then he worked at a CrossFit gym doing janitorial work for 30 minutes and he was so good at it and he loved it. So that was really cool because just to see him just really enjoy going to work.
Yeah.
That was another success story.
So cool. That is so cool. And, you know, I also wanted to ask you a little bit about like the challenges, some of the, I hate to say this word, but almost like the failures, because, you know, you can never get successes without some bumps in the road. So tell me about a time where, you know, you had a client that was going through the ready. You know what, maybe it just at that time wasn't the right fit for them.
Yeah, actually, we did. I remember having one team that we tried to do the ready curriculum with them, but I felt like we needed to work more on the social skills piece than the job piece, because I know they were super eager to get a job.
Yeah.
But I knew that they weren't there yet because they had to work on the social piece. So I have worked with teens where I know there are other barriers to them getting a job. The social piece, the anxiety. I work with teens with like severe anxiety that it's going to be hard for them to get a job until they feel comfortable getting a job and being in public and being around others. So that can be a challenge when you know, like, okay, they're motivated to get a job, but they cannot get a job right now until we work on this, until we work on the social skills, until we work on the anxiety piece and working on just like coping skills too, right? Like if my teen is having a challenging time with coping skills, I don't want to set them up for failure by putting them through a job program where they're going to get a job and probably get fired the first day, you know? So really working with them on those prerequisite skills.
Yeah.
You know, before we enter them into the ready program.
Yeah. But you know what though, like too, it's so good that you're even identifying those and working with the client to identify them, because that's how they can become more successful. And that's how you get those breakthrough stories.
Definitely.
That's so cool. Well, Carolyn, I had a blast talking with you about this tonight.
Too.
You taught me so much, like just within like my own practice. Like for me, I'm so excited to, you know, I'm so excited for this to come out, but also more importantly, like I'm so excited that this was talked about, because disability employment in general is very, very, it's inaccessible for a lot of members of our community. You know, if you could give, you know, behavior analysts advice on working with clients that, you know, want to get into competitive employment, what would you say?
Listen to your clients. Listen to them. I think a lot of times we're in our bubble of, and this is what I learned from transitioning from working with kids to adults, especially in my early years, right? Because when I became a BCBA in late 2015, I was in a bubble. I was very like, some of the things I implemented in 2015, I do not implement now, right? Yeah. And I think that working with adults is a different world. Working with teens is a different world. Just like we want to listen to all our clients, we really have to listen to our teens and adults.
Yeah.
Because they're going to tell us what they like and don't like. If they're able to tell us that, they're going to tell us what they like and don't like. And we have to take that into consideration. We can't force them is another thing. We can't force them to work. We can't force them to do anything. I'm not going to hand over hand prompt my, I don't hand over hand prompt my clients, period. But I'm not going to hand over hand prompt my teen when they're at their job, right? So like, you have to do what you can do to maintain client dignity, give them that support, but also that space and independence. Listen to them.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, isn't the whole goal to, you know, be as least restrictive as humanly possible?
Exactly. So they can live their best life? Yeah. Like, we want to be least restrictive with them. Right.
Exactly.
Also considering like talking to them too much during when they're at work is not least restrictive.
True.
You know,
that is so true. Yeah.
Like prompting them all the time. And I think that was one of the things that I've come across working with my adults is them feeling like they're over prompted.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I know what I'm doing. Just want some space. So give them space.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it goes back to bodily autonomy and self-advocacy, you know, teaching them, hey, I can do this. I got this. You need to walk away for a little bit so I can focus on what I need to do. I mean, I think that is just such an important skill to have altogether. But then also too, I think it's important for, you know, people who are going to be helping our clients with these things to know as well.
Definitely.
Absolute blast talking with you. And Carolyn, where can our listeners find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Behavior Shorty. If you're on TikTok, I also am on TikTok. I'm working on it. I'm a millennial. I'm working on it, but at Behavior Shorty. Or you can visit my website, behaviorshorty.com, for my services. If you're looking for tutoring or supervision, I offer that as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you everyone for listening into this amazing episode tonight. I have been your host, Michelle Zeman, and I will see you and hear you on the next one. Bye guys.